Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rickrout.
And today we have our second episode in our frequent cinematic collaborators series. We will be talking about the works of director Steven Spielberg and composer John Williams. I'm so excited for this episode. I think they are one of the greatest pairs really in film history. And they've had recent collaborations too that we've covered on our Oscar Contender series. But we're also using this episode today as an excuse to celebrate the 50th anniversary of Jaws, one of the all-time summer blockbusters. No movie, I think, gets me as ready for summer as Jaws. So I can't wait for this one.
It was definitely nice rewatching this movie to get ready for summer, to be on the beach, because the weather lately has been a little bit erratic. And yeah, it's a great movie. Like we'll mention with its awards it received, it was the first blockbuster. And that's a weird concept, I think, because we've had them all our lives. But the fact that they only started in the 70s and it started with this movie, which was only the second collaboration between John Williams and Steven Spielberg, and just created something so iconic. It's a bit mind-blowing. It's exciting. And I think it shows the relationship of these two filmmakers and how they fostered this great love of cinema. We can talk about how they work together and their process, but looking at all 29 of their films, whether you like them or not, you remember the scores, you feel the scores, they're emotional, and they really are a necessary part of these movies. And it takes you back to your childhood, it takes you to outer space, to an island filled with dinosaurs, and literally everywhere and in between. And I think, again, that speaks to them and really just the joy they put into their films. So this is a great episode. I'm glad we're talking about them and using this series idea to talk about not just actors, but composers and even the effect that they can have on film history.
Yeah, well, and I love that we will have some episodes coming up about craftspeople, because we spend so much time, I think, during the Contender series talking about why we love the below the line category so much. And a lot of times they don't get enough credit, but thinking about Steven Spielberg and John Williams at the Oscars, Spielberg has 23 nominations and 3 wins. John Williams has been nominated for 54 Oscars and has won 5. 54 Oscar nominations. That is just a crazy thing, because I think, you know, when we think about the Oscars, we think about the Meryl Streeps, you know, the actors, I think, and the big nomination halls that some of our greatest actors might have, or, you know, how many they might have without a win, like Glenn Close with 8 nominations. But 54 nominations for John Williams, and the two of them together have 29 collaborations, which began with 1974's The Sugarland Express. We also have, we're just going to read through all of these so everyone knows all of the movies that they worked on together in chronological order. So we have The Sugarland Express, Jaws, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 1941, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., The Extraterrestrial, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Empire of the Sun, Always, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Hook, Schindler's List, Jurassic Park, Amistad, The Lost World, Jurassic Park, Saving Private Ryan, AI, Artificial Intelligence, Minority Report, Catch Me If You Can, The Terminal, War of the Worlds, Munich, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, War Horse, The Adventures of Tintin, Lincoln, The BFG, The Post, and The Fabelmans. So thinking about all of these, what was your introduction to John Williams and Steven Spielberg?
I think when I was youngest growing up, I would have watched Hook. I would have watched E.T. I don't really know if any of these were staples to my childhood, but definitely in growing up and either rewatching them or just seeing posters for them everywhere all the time, I knew that they were from Steven Spielberg. And then when you do see the posters, you can hear those scores of some of these movies. I'd watched Jurassic Park when I was older, and I really loved Minority Report when that came out. Maybe don't ask me why, but the action, the premonitions, all of that, the turn of the century, that really intrigued me. So that was one of my favorites. The Terminal was sweet. It's just going through this list, we could just do this for an hour and talk about some favorites. And I'll sometimes mention in filmography is that there's something for everyone. And I think that really is the case here. The Fablemans was one of my favorites from that recent award season. And I've only not seen a handful, I would say. And listening to all of the scores, the compilations, I only wasn't aware of Always. But tell me what some of your favorites are or what you grew up watching.
Yeah, it's hard to know, I think, which one was the first one, but I'll say the ones that stick out in my memory from childhood are definitely Jaws, which we'll talk about today. I think that's just a theme I heard before I had even seen the movie, just like imitated or in other TV shows or movies. I think it's very iconic. Raiders of the Lost Ark was a really big one for me growing up. I was introduced to that movie as a kid, and this is for any Ohioans listening. At Kings Island, there used to be a Raiders of the Lost Ark themed ride, and they would play the score on it. So I remember that. And I feel like I'm like you today, talking about an amusement park ride, but that ride, I remember the score playing. E.T., of course, and then Jurassic Park. Whenever we would drive through Pennsylvania, there are these big green mountains that you drive through. I used to hum the Jurassic Park theme.
Oh my God. That's adorable.
These scores are really iconic. And Steven Spielberg, I mean, his movies are just, they're filled with music. And I think that's just because of how he thinks about music, how he knows it can have such an emotional effect on the audience. And then you mentioning Minority Report, really in the early 2000s, I mean, a lot of these films also played a really big part in my childhood and in growing up. But I also really love the Catch Me If You Can score. I think that one is also really fun and one that I will listen to from time to time now. It's a good like writing and work score. So yeah, there's so many of these, though. And then any of the dramas, too, I think are really good. Like Schindler's List, I think that has a really beautiful theme. But I mean, you really can't go wrong. I think as we, you know, I prefer, I think, some of the classics and their emotion to some of the later ones. But yeah, I mean, there are so many good ones here.
Well, if we're talking about rides and the fact that our last Jaws episode was from July 2020, I may have mentioned this. I don't know. That was 5 years ago. But yeah, the Jaws ride at Universal, the Indiana Jones ride, all of those. Honestly, that was probably my first introduction to either of these people or those movies. I definitely didn't watch Jaws as a kid. But also the E.T. ride when you're on the bikes and you get the picture with E.T. Like, that is so cute. Oh my God, the memory is just coming back. But Jaws, where it pops out of the water and you get splashed in the boat, or Indiana Jones and you're rumbling through and that big stone is coming at you. Like, even just the fact that, you know, I remember these, they're filled with iconic sequences, let alone the music and their permanence in film history. I also liked reading up on how Williams and Spielberg worked together. So John Williams normally wouldn't read the script for the movie. He would wait until it was done to see the film, and then he would determine which sequences needed sound or don't need sound. We can talk about that definitely with Jaws and how that heightens the emotion and the intensity of certain sequences. But like with Jurassic Park, he saw that movie and there were no visual effects added. So when he saw it, it's just the actors without the dinosaurs, and he somehow still came up with that feeling, that adventure, that sense of wonder of what they were looking at. You know, maybe that speaks to Laura Dern and Jeff Goldblum and the entire team, but that just feels like an impossible feat that we have that without the immensity of some of these images that Spielberg shows us. And there's so many other things of like going back to their roots for Catch Me If You Can, where they both love jazz, and John Williams is a jazz pianist in the 50s. So I think how historically accurate these movies and scores can be also helps lift up these movies. And again, being a reason why we talk about them today.
I love those stories. In reading up about Williams and Spielberg, I also liked a lot of those details around their collaborations, but I was also really struck by the story of how they met. They met on a blind lunch date in the 70s because Spielberg wanted to meet John Williams. He wanted to work with him, but Steven Spielberg was in his 20s at the time and Williams was in his 40s. They went to this like fancy martini lunch, as John Williams recalls, and he said that he had this feeling that this kid has never been to a lunch like this. He was like a teenager to him. He said he wasn't much older than his kids at the time. And he kind of thought, like, who is this guy? But he said he got the impression that Spielberg knew more about his music than he did. He said he was just very prepared. He had done his research. He knew so much about him and wanted to work with him that he couldn't really say no. He said he was just so struck by that first meeting and seeing this kid there, or someone who looked like a kid. And then, you know, what ended up actually happening, the rest is history with those two. Like, mm-hmm. they've worked together since the 70s. And I just think that's so cool that they were able to have that connection. They worked together for over 50 years.
And just saying that he was 40 and Spielberg was in his 20s. And then later on, hearing John Williams call Spielberg his muse, that is just a connection I feel like that is so rare and unique, especially in Hollywood, that feels magical in itself. Was kind of a weird thought. I mean, yeah, imagine working with someone just out of college and creating a lifelong career together.
Yeah.
Wild.
It's also kind of cool because it's like, who knows? In 10 years, you might meet the person who's going to alter your career. Like, mm-hmm. that didn't happen for Williams until he was in his 40s. I think that's really cool.
Okay, so let's get into some of the other awards that they won together and were nominated for. So they had 3 collaborative wins at the Oscars, including Jaws, E.T., and Schindler's List, and they had 15 other nominations. Their first nomination and win together was for Jaws, which was, again, only their second picture together, which feels wild. At the BAFTAs, they had 4 wins together and 6 other nominations. At the Golden Globes, 2 wins and 9 other nominations. At the Grammys, they had 15 wins and 22 nominations together. And they both received Kennedy Center honors. I thought that was very interesting as well. Also a rare recognition. Have you seen the new documentary Music by John Williams? I know this is on Disney Plus.
I did watch this on Disney Plus. It is great to throw on. I think if you just want to learn more about him and just get to listen to more of his music, I think it's just kind of a nice, lovely documentary about him. Have you seen it?
I have similar thoughts. It's great to see John Williams. Again, he's 93, someone who is still working. It's just fascinating to watch his process and how him and Spielberg act now versus how they did throughout their career. And just hearing all of his scores, you know, we talked about 29 of them here, but we didn't even mention, because obviously Spielberg didn't direct them, but Star Wars, Harry Potter, Home Alone, Superman, and The Accidental Tourist, and The Long Goodbye, The Towering Inferno, Valley of the Dolls. He's just done so much. So again, we would recommend that. We'll talk about some other new releases coming about him and their collaboration. But I think let's get into Jaws, because like we mentioned, we talked about this 5 years ago. This rewatch for me, I felt like I saw a new cut of the film. Like, it felt so new to me, which I think is why it's fun and why people return to it and why it was so monumental at the time in 1975.
I'm so glad that you had a new experience watching it too, because I think that's the mark of a great classic. And for me, I actually felt really similarly watching it this time, which is that I picked up on new things. Different things made me scared or sad or stood out to me in a different way. And I realized that the last time I watched it so closely was when we covered it as part of our 1975 episode back in 2020. And in 2020, we were living through a pandemic. And this movie felt so real, I think, in you know, how the government operates and telling you what's safe and what isn't and precautions you need to be taking. And I think I watched it then and couldn't really divorce it from what we were going through, which I think made it a really unique experience. But it was interesting this time, I think, to kind of have that more in the rear view and see it as, okay, these are things that just never change, right? Local governments are still acting up like this, just like they did back then. But you can also, right, enjoy it as just this fun blockbuster, like you mentioned at the top. So I love watching this movie. It is one that if I don't watch it every year, I watch it every other year. It's such a fun watch. So let's get into Jaws' description here. When a massive killer shark unleashes chaos on a beach community off Long Island, it's up to a local sheriff, a marine biologist, and an old seafarer to hunt the beast down. This stars Roy Scheider, Richard Dreyfuss, Robert Shaw, and Murray Hamilton. At the Oscars, it won 3 film editing, sound, and of course, score for John Williams. It was also nominated in picture. It won the Ace Eddie Award for edited feature, a BAFTA for score for Williams, and it had 6 other nominations for film, director, actor for Dreyfuss, screenplay, film editing, and soundtrack. It also won the Golden Globe for score for Williams and had 3 other nominations for motion picture drama, director for Spielberg, and screenplay. It won a Grammy for score for Williams, the People's Choice Award for favorite motion picture. It has the Guinness World Record for first summer blockbuster, like you talked about, and it was also nominated at the DGA for Spielberg and the WGA for Peter Benchley and Carl Gottlieb. This is, of course, based on the best-selling novel by Peter Benchley. So not only is it a blockbuster, it was a hit at the box office, the novel was a huge deal. And I think that was also part of what brought audiences to theaters. But you started talking about how this was a great watch of Jaws for you. What did you like about it this time around? And maybe what is your relationship to the movie?
I think what you said about, you know, living through a pandemic and feeling all of those similarities was not something I thought about this time around. It was obviously scarier at the time. And I remembered focusing on those scenes in my head and how we talked about the mayor and how politically centered he was, how important it was for him to make money for the city, how they couldn't close the beach despite what the medical examiner found, despite, you know, that people could die. He needed to make the money, and seeing his ideals founded in that corporate greed is grimy. It's a testament of this film really being ground in a reality that we still live in, and it has nothing to do with a shark attack. So I had all of those concepts in the back of my head, but I also think in this viewing that I wanted to focus on the score, it also led me to appreciate different scenes, like when they're all working together as a team. I think I found the wife to have a more interesting role, or just the ways that they captured her and showed her. Not much, but the way she cares for her husband and, you know, when she says goodbye, when they go off before their potential final trip, the seaman, Quint, is teasing her and, you know, saying all these awful things, and she cries and runs off. Like, there are prickly things about these characters and how the three of them, how Hooper, Quint, and Brody all interact on the boat. And I think I saw Brody, this is the Roy Scheider character, his fear of water and drowning a bit differently this time. So I don't know what it was about this, but I guess getting back to John Williams just for a second, like, obviously we know the two notes and how important that is and how it personifies what the shark sounds like or the intensity behind it. But there's also so much more adventure and excitement in the music than I think people give this movie credit for. And you mentioned all the awards it won, and having won a Grammy is deserving because of my observations this time. But I would say it became a lot more centered to me as these people just trying to survive and care for each other. What were things that you noticed on this viewing, since you said it was also a bit new for you in ways?
Yeah, I think this time I was really impressed by the writing of the characters, because I think what we've talked about before and how I've always thought of Jaws is, oh, okay, you can, you know, watch it as this really fun creature feature. It's a good summer movie. Or you can look a bit more deeply at its themes and how it talks about local governments and what your own personal responsibility in that is and how our governments rendered complicit and everything. You know, those are, I think, the ways that I've approached the movie before. But this time, I think I just was really drawn to these characters. I think in particular, the Roy Scheider character, Brody, one, you know, I just love Roy Scheider. He is one of my favorites from the time, and I think he's quite underrated, really. But I love that he comes into this town as an outsider, and he doesn't come in like this arrogant, cocky superhero. He is trying to understand this new place where he lives. And, you know, at the beginning, even his wife makes a comment about how he doesn't talk like the people in Amity, in his new town, and he has a different accent. And I like that idea of this outsider coming in and just being thrown into this mess right away, and it testing him, and the way that he interacts with the mayor, who is just this absolutely horrible character, still is, always will be, and how, like you were talking about, he has to confront his own fears. So I think I was really, really drawn to him as a character this time around. But also, I think some really cool things that Spielberg does with the camera, which is pretty crazy for a 27-year-old director. And I know he made a big stink about not being nominated at the Oscars, but honestly, good for him. Like, he absolutely should have been nominated for director for this movie. But two of my favorite visual things here, I love, and this has always been my favorite thing, but it hits me every time. And it's when Brody's on the phone with the medical examiner after the first attack on that girl that we see at the very beginning. And instead of hearing the audio from the other end of the phone, we actually just see him type in extreme close-up, shark attack. It's such a smart, clever detail just to hear that click-clack of the typewriter. And we know that that's the cause of death, right? But for that to be the visual image of him discovering that, I think is really smart. And then the other part is that I have always been kind of devastated by the Mrs. Kintner scene when her son is killed. And the image this time, it wasn't her standing there looking for him. It was the bloody, deflated raft that had come in and washed ashore after he'd been eaten by the shark. And I just thought, oh my God, like, that is such a painful, horrifying image. And it stood out to me. And I think as you get older, you just naturally relate more to the parents or the older characters in the film. And this time around, I always feel sad for her, but seeing that image of the raft after they knew that they shouldn't be letting people into the water, but they did anyway. That was one of those details where I thought, okay, he's just a really smart visual storyteller.
And the implications of that, of when she goes up to Chief Brody and she slaps him, And she goes, you know, I hear that you knew about this and you still let us onto the beach. And I think that political influence of the mayor over the cop is at the core of Brody's internal struggle and something we see every day. And it's frustrating because, you know, it wasn't him. He wanted to keep the people safe. I think that has to do with him coming in also as an outsider and having the power and caring. You know, they have kids and at one moment their son is in danger and they run like hell to go save him. So it shows the humanity inside of him in that, you know, despite having done everything he could have to convince the mayor or to make it right, they still see him as the bad guy. And that's just really frustrating. So again, those little details of not just a shark attack killing people, but how it affects the island, the city, its population, has way more drastic effects than you would think. Kind of tied to this that I really like this time is when they're watching Brody and his wife watching their son just sitting on the dock, their two sons, and he wants the son to get out of the boat, even though he's not in the water. And then the book he's holding, the wife starts looking through it and sees the shark eat the boat. And then she screams at the boy to get out of the water. So
it's so good.
Some of that, I think, you know, is sharks attacking boats, eating the wood off of the side of a boat feels like something out of a movie. But to see that happen later on and how Spielberg accomplishes that with this big motorized shark is also the beauty of this movie. He makes certain horrors implied, like by the score and by certain shots. I love a lot of the camera work under the water. There are some great split diopters and zoom dollies that are incredible. He also does that physically with effects, with blood everywhere. You see limbs exploding. And some of it is gross. You know, it is very 70s disaster flick kind of effects. But it still works today, I would say. I still really enjoy everything that happens for its nostalgia or just for what it makes you feel.
Yeah. And in thinking about the score specifically and what's so impressive about it is that it's really known for what's called a two-note ostinato, which is the shark theme. And John Williams, when he showed it to Spielberg, he thought it was a joke at first. Like, really that? But that's what it was. They went with it and it totally works. And I think while Jaws, when you think of the score, it is known for that little bit, the rest of the score, I think, is really good. There are a lot of, I think, really solid pieces of music throughout this movie. But I think, yeah, that little, those little two notes. I'm not a musician, clearly, with the way I'm talking about this. But it is, I think, just a great theme. And the other thing I'll add to that I really enjoyed that is a scene that always stands out to me is it's after a few attacks and people are on the beach and no one is going out into the water. And the mayor forces that one family to go get in. And once the one family goes, everybody else does too. And it's this idea of like herd mentality and also, again, your own responsibility in that and how it should be the mayor who is telling people, no, you need to stay out of the water. It's dangerous. But like he says, Amity is a summer town. We need summer dollars. We also have to talk about the greatest line delivery ever, which makes me laugh.
A what?
Every single time. A what?
That one?
Yeah.
A macaw, a tiger shark. A what? Best.
It is
best
so,
moment.
So funny. Who is this hero? Definitely wasn't instructed to say it that way, but chose to anyway. And it is one of my favorite things. I rewind it and have to listen to it at least 5 times if I'm not seeing this in a theater. But if you are seeing in a theater, perfection.
Which is a perfect segue to talk about the comedy in this movie and how it plays with genre. There's maybe not much to say, but I felt some really dark comedic moments that I hadn't really caught before. Like when they're on the boat, this was incredible. And it's such an adult thing that kids wouldn't get if you were watching this, but they're on the boat and Quint is coming down and he sees Hooper playing solitaire and he says, "Hooper, stop playing with yourself." And he turns around. It's just little quips, little asides that don't corner this movie into one box. It's horror, it's thriller, it's drama, it's a political thriller of sorts. It's a comedy at times, you know, it does everything. And again, just thinking back that Spielberg was 27 is truly insane that he was able to put all of this together. And if you've read the book, maybe you can talk about that a little bit. But just because the book was a success doesn't mean the adaptation is going to be.
I actually haven't read the book, but I want to. It's one of those things where, like, the movie is so iconic in my mind that I don't know if I can read the book. It's like The Godfather. I've never read The Godfather, and I feel like I should. I know a lot about the book and its differences with the movie, but I've actually never read it. And that's exactly how I am with Jaws, where I wonder if I would enjoy it. I probably wouldn't enjoy it as much. I think I might. Maybe it would be a fun summer read, though, because I think it is kind of one of those like mass-produced thriller paperbacks, which I do like. I do enjoy one of those from time to time. So, and looking at this here, it looks like it's only 278 pages, which is not bad. I think I could fly through that.
That's a weekend maybe that'll at the be beach.
That'll be on my reading list for the summer.
Honestly, I might go pick it up too. That sounds so fun. I mean, not if you're at the beach, you're not getting in the water, but
I'll use it when I go to Central Ohio to visit my family and there's no water anywhere except for
lakes
a nice
are safe,
pool.
Not the ocean. Yes.
It is funny though, like how people were so afraid of sharks after this book and this movie in particular. Like it really, I think, traumatized audiences because it was such a hit, and all of a sudden this fear in shark attacks and shark sightings spiked because people were so afraid. So it really, I think, had a chokehold on the public.
I just want to ask you briefly too about its sequels. So in terms of their collaborations, the only sequels they worked on together were from Jurassic Park and Indiana Jones. Steven Spielberg didn't direct any more of the Jaws films. There are three others, Jaws 2, Jaws 3D, and Jaws The Revenge. But I did start watching Jaws 2 because John Williams stayed on for the score. He didn't for the others. So have you seen any of these sequels?
I have not seen any of these sequels, and I think I might try this year. It's one of those things where I just kind of like how I was with The Exorcist sequels for a while, where I just thought, why mess with a good thing? I don't need to do this. I love the original. I don't need to see what these sequels are all about. And then I ended up watching all of them. And, you know, I think some are pretty good and some are not so great, but they were pretty fun to watch nonetheless. So I think I might give these a try, especially because Roy Scheider is in Jaws 2. So I do think I need to do that. But I really have to say that what's pulling me in to watching Jaws 2 is this incredible tagline. Just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water. That's great.
Yeah. And Dennis Quaid is in the third one. Lorraine Gray is just in all of them. She really stuck it out. But
she sure
I don't
did.
Know what else they could do.
Yeah. She also has a great line in the movie. I love when she's like, want to get drunk and fool around to her husband. That's so good.
It's like, let's get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in celebration of this anniversary, I saw that the Jaws score is being remastered and coming out on June 20th. And then National Geographic also has a doc called Jaws at 50, the definitive inside story, coming out July 11th on Hulu and Disney Plus. So I feel like that could be fun, you know, looking back at, I think the poster of this is that iconic photo of Spielberg laying in the mouth of the shark. So getting a lot of that old footage and having these interviews from crew members and the cast again, just reviving this incredible setting and film. But our final question, if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I would actually give it to John Williams for score. I think this is such an iconic piece of music. It truly is. I think if you hear it anywhere, you think of Jaws. I think people who haven't even seen Jaws yet might know those two notes that we talked about. And I feel like I mentioned earlier, it isn't just that quick theme either. It's the rest of the score too. I think it really is just phenomenal work from him, and the fact that it was so early in their collaboration too. And it just shows, I think, how great he is as Steven Spielberg's muse and collaborator, but also playing in different genres. So I would go score for John Williams with, I would say, editing at a close second. What about you?
I'm going to give it to John as well. I think Spielberg is my close second for directing, but exactly what you're saying, it's the entire score. I loved that initially, yes, he thought it was a joke, but then as he explained it to Spielberg, he was like, well, you know, you can put those two notes really closely together, or you can add time in between them, and it makes them feel so different. And Spielberg used this in his filmmaking. So as those notes got faster and faster, the camera moves in on those legs dangling in the water, and you know what's about to happen. Even if you didn't have an image, you know what's going to happen as you hear that speed up. So I think that is just totally ingenious. And I also love the July 4th celebration score. It's so adventurous, like Jurassic Park and many of their others, like E.T. I think those early films really are their best. Like you said earlier, too, it's those touchstone themes, this majestic quality that is sometimes light and sometimes dark. But again, I bring it back to the emotion and really what it stirs up inside of you. And that is what really changed cinema. It scared people at the theater. And I think going back and seeing it, it's why. It's John Williams. He's a wonderful composer. Again, I can't believe he's still working, but so deserved this first Oscar of his.
I completely agree. If you haven't seen Jaws, or if you're just looking to watch it again, highly recommend this summer just Googling maybe once a week or so to see if it is coming to a theater near you. It is just such a wonderful theatrical experience. I've seen it in a theater now multiple times because it's just one of those things that after you've seen it there once, it's just such a fun, engrossing experience. So even more fun if it's, you know, at a pool or a drive-in or something that has a very summery feel to it. But even if not, there are great physical media options too. And it's available on Tubi for free and a couple of other streaming platforms too. So definitely give it a watch. It's well worth the viewing. And I think it's my favorite Spielberg. My sister asked me that last night, you know, what's your favorite Spielberg? And I think it is Jaws.
I don't know if I can answer that.
I mean, it's an impossible question. There are so many options.
I think after listening to so much of John Williams, my favorite might be E.T.
It's a good pick too.
Jaws is iconic. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an even more impossible question of, you know, what's your favorite score of his?
Yeah. I think mine, if I'm really thinking about score, I think it's Raiders of the Lost Ark or Catch Me If You Can.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all so good.
Yeah. And I think so many people would have different favorites. And that's so great.
I think so too. Well, next time on Oscar Wilde, we have another fun episode coming. We'll be doing a quick little review of Celine Song's new film, Materialist, starring Dakota Johnson, Pedro Pascal, and Chris Evans. This is a lovely and mean little romantic dramedy about the horrors of modern dating in New York. Highly recommend. And we'll also be doing some fun early Oscar predictions. We say fun because if you've ever listened to our early Oscar predictions episodes before, you know we are not taking these seriously. It is so early. We go so off the rails with these, and we're just here to have fun. So we really, I think, do these as a way to kind of, yes, predict some things that might happen. Also, maybe shout out some of our favorites that might be coming this season, and just, I think, get excited mm-hmm. for the season as a whole.
If you want to listen back to some of those episodes, I do recommend it as a good laugh. During award season, I looked back and said, oh, like, how many did I get? I mean, the percentage I will not be repeating, but it's just, yeah, I think a barometer for where we're at. And, you know, we can look to Cannes as the big mm-hmm. festival that can tell us what's happening, but that's not always the case.
Right.
So, yeah, whether it's movies we're excited for and or performances or Celine song from Materialist, maybe there's some potential there. So we'll have fun with this, whether that's the case or not.
I'm not gonna spoil that one for you. I will let you wait and see. But thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, Blue Sky at Oscar Wilde Pod. And if you really like our show, you can subscribe on patreon.com/OscarWilde.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.